Welcome to Goals Question Time, where I interview leading executives driving innovation, venturing, and strategic change.
So today for Goals Question Time, I've got the pleasure of being joined by Bill Yeo. Hi, Bill.
Hi. How are you, Andrew?
Very good, Bill. Very good, Bill. We met at an AgriTech venture event, and that in Oxford Harwell, and that a few months back. So it's great to be in contact with you again.
So yes,
could
pleasure
you
to be here.
Could you kick off and introduce yourself first, please, and we'll get into the detail?
Sure. I am a global citizen. Worked and lived all around the world. I currently am a general partner at SOSV, and I co-founded the Indie Bio program back in 2014. And in that first batch, we had companies like Perfect Day, you know, that make milk without cows, and a bunch of other amazing unicorns that made it a very good first batch. We're now one of the most prolific life science investors in the world. I'm also an advisor to a New Zealand fund called AgriZero, which is dedicated to funding startups that reduce the carbon emissions and methane emissions of agriculture to nothing. And then I'm also chair of Katua Fund, which is a food as medicine fund. That's a CVC owned by Fonterra. We do have a lot of dry powder, and we also have a normal VC mandate for a significant portion of the fund. So we're actually acting as a normal VC for most of it, and also an LP. On top of all that, I've got a couple of charities that I've funded that are global. WeForest planted 82 million odd trees, funded 100 million trees. Coda Dojo, which is now part of Raspberry Pi Foundation, the largest network of free coding clubs for kids. And on top of all that, I have actually co-founded and taken public a couple of $1 billion startups. So I've seen it all from every angle.
Amazing, Bill. Amazing. I'm not sure where to start with all of that. I've got to go back down the checklist again. You seem to be very purpose-driven in what you're doing and the organizations you're in. So what's the strategic driver for you and the funds and that you're involved with? What's some of the key things that are running through that, do you think?
So that's I think a common mistake people make is that they think that strategy drives purpose. And it's actually the other way around. So many years ago, I looked at what makes life meaningful. And honestly, the best answer I could find, looking deeply into philosophy, is that life has no meaning other than the meaning you make. And one of the most meaningful things you can make is purpose. And so my purpose in life is a world that works for all living things while civilization thrives. And all of my strategic and tactical decisions are actually driven by that purpose rather than the other way around. And my purpose is grounded in values. And like some of my favorite values are kindness, curiosity, and getting shit done.
Yeah, amazing. Right. Okay. Getting that shit done perspective. What's the process you go through then when you're seeing ventures, when they knock on your door at SOSV or at your funds? What's the process you go through to give guidance to these entrepreneurs?
So if they just knock on my door cold, I'm probably going to pass. Just because they haven't put the work in. If they're just sending me a cold email, like finding my name on a list, that's easy. And that doesn't prove that you have any care for what our investment considerations are. And that's a mistake.
Yeah.
You a good relationship between any two people or any two businesses is founded on mutual understanding and trust. And so just kicking down my door is not really a great way to do either of those things.
Yeah.
So, you know, one of the processes that I highly recommend people do is that they look at similar businesses to their own that are one stage later. So if they're Series Seed, look at people who've already raised their Series A, because most investors are kind of stage bound. Yeah, they might follow on, but they don't lead in and you know, they've got a sweet spot that they lead in.
Yeah.
So somebody's rated a Series A in your field, like somewhere adjacent. The investors invested their money. They might have some follow on, but you know that investor is interested in the space.
Yeah.
Well, go to that company and seek out the C-suite, especially the CFO, and say, hey, can you give me some advice? You were very successful raising at Series A from these investors.
Yeah.
You know, how could I get into that? What should I make my deck look like? You know, is there someone there that I should be approaching? And after you've got lots of advice, you might even be able to ask, hey, would you mind giving me an intro?
Yeah.
And if one of my portfolio companies that I'm invested in and I'm happy with says, hey, I've met this other slightly younger company that's looking to do a similar sort of round, it's in an adjacent space, you know, it's not a competitor to ours, but it might be interesting knowing what you like to invest in, Bill. I mean, that really shows that somebody's put the work in, that they're interested, they've identified us as a relevant investor, and it's not just spray and pray.
Yeah.
That's gonna be a meeting I take. Like there is no doubt you know, they get the meeting for that investment.
Yeah. Oh, that's a masterclass in networking and getting to know and it doesn't.
Well, you asked really, about process.
That's perfect. You know, it's and it really helps to not waste your time and not waste the entrepreneur's time, because I very much agree that yeah. If you haven't done your research and you're not investing in the right sort of sector or in the right sort of stage, you know, you're just wasting your time. And time is limited for entrepreneurs. So just, you know, do that bit of legwork and all that.
You're not just wasting your time. You're also wasting critical motivation.
Yeah.
Right? You know, everybody has a certain level of nose that they can tolerate before they have to go down the pub. And if you just spray and pray, you're going to get the worse than no's. You're going to get, like, if you send 1,000 random emails to investors, you're probably going to get one response, and it's probably going to be no.
Yeah.
Like, that's very disheartening. Whereas if you get warm introductions from people who've already had money from these investors and who know them, you know, your success rate's going to go way up. You're going to feel much more motivated. You're going to learn a lot more about the kinds of investors that are investing in your sector. It's just, it's all good. There's no downside.
Yeah. So people are so important and central to these sort of things. So in terms of then, if they get, they've got the introduction, they've got through your door, what is it you're looking for in the person that's going to be running this venture and you're going to be working with, and that with, you know, in the ones you're investing in?
That it's not the person running the the people, plural, is the first test, even at the accelerator pre-stage stage. If you as a startup founder cannot convince at least one other human to follow you passionately, why should I give you any money? And then, you know, the best possible, I mean, we're deep tech investors, so the best possible combination I've seen is where the team has both the ability to hustle and has deep scientific knowledge and has the ability to build things. So, you know, there's a dynamic tension there, right? Because if it's all hustle and no science, then you get Theranos. If it's all science and no hustle, well, you get the story of most academic spin-outs that never go anywhere. And if you have the deep tech and you have the hustle and there's no activity in building, then the traction, you never get product market fit. So you really need those three buckets filled. And if you don't have those three, then you need to either build that muscle yourself in one of the buckets, or you've got to find someone who'll believe in you enough to follow on and bring that strength to the table.
Yeah.
And it's hard. This is the hardest thing in the world, is finding people. And I will give one piece of killer advice here. Founder vesting agreements.
Yeah.
Essentially prenups for startups. You know, every bad team situation I've ever seen has had either no founding vesting agreement, or one that's expired too soon, or one that's got no teeth.
Yeah.
Because you've got to keep everybody on the same page that if they stop pulling their weight, they're going to give up their equity.
Yeah. No, definitely. I agree with that 100%. I've been through a number of ventures as a founder and investor, and also we've got caught out by that. But also in the more recent ones I've had, we've had proper founder agreements, and you can sort the stuff out relatively quickly and relatively amicably because you had those discussions and that pre the situation. So I'd reiterate what you're saying there, Bill. I very much agree.
It's also a good test of how persuasive you've been. Like, if people are negotiating hard on their founder vesting, that's a very good signal to you as CEO that they're believers.
Yeah. No, great point. So moving the discussion forward, we've talked about your purpose, we talked about the process, talked about the people, partnerships, and who else you're involving in your value chain and sort of stuff like that. Maybe you could give some examples of how you're building this sort of ecosystem or value chain, and maybe examples from some of your ventures like Perfect Day or sort of something like that, because you can't just create milk, you know, or a milk alternative without understanding in the value chain. Maybe you can give us some examples, those partnership importance of that.
Yeah, I mean, we live in a world where you cannot do it all anymore. Like, if you were to pick up, a computer mouse, no single human in the world could make all the components of that mouse.
Mm-hmm.
There's supply chain, there's logistics, there's design, there's material sourcing, there's repairs, there's engineering, there's silicon, there's circuit boards, there's plastic molding, there's sustainability, there's legal. Like, just to make a computer mouse.
Yeah.
So if you go around and you look for partners who you can get enthusiastic about what you're doing, they can underwrite all sorts of things that you're doing. So, in the case of some of our big fermentation companies like Perfect Day, finding a fermentation partner who has already invested in enormous, hundreds of millions of dollars of steel tanks so that you don't have to. Finding a sales and distribution partner so that you can build your ingredient into existing products or into adjacent products that they are already selling so that you can get to revenue faster. One of the great powers of our accelerator programs at SOSV is that you actually go into the program with a batch of contemporaries and you all go through the same sort of pains at the same time and you form these long-term founder-to-founder relationships. And just having the right advice at the right time from a fellow founder or one of their advisors can be an incredibly powerful partnership.
Yeah.
And then when it comes to getting investment, unlike grants where honestly you don't get much partnership, you really get the money and some surveillance, your investors should be great partners. They should be assisting you to get the next round done. They should be giving you the benefit of their wisdom and their market intelligence and, not just following up on you, actually assisting you to thrive. And I'm not saying, they have to be exactly super smart money or anything. I'm just saying they should be considered a partner and you should be walking together shoulder to shoulder because that investment relationship may be 5, 10, 15 years long. Yeah, that's a partnership as far as I'm concerned. I mean, that outlasts many of today's marriages, right?
Yeah. No, definitely the case. I'd be interested in your perspective on this new way, this technology that's coming through now, artificial intelligence, Gen AI, because that to me, that's going to be partnership's going to be important to that. You know, which LLMs you're going to use, who's the software partner you're going to work with, who are you going to work with to get your head around how business models are going to change. You've got a perspective on that on AI and how it's impacting startups and corporates.
Yeah, I think that the current crop of generative AI is a significant improvement in the user interface. Like the technology itself is not new. And we've had language models, we've had machine learning for a long, long time. It's just that we've never had it in the balance point where the average human can access that level of generative AI for peanuts, or if not free. And that's and in a way that is so easy to understand that yeah, literally anyone who can read or write for now mm-hmm. can do it. Soon will be there'll be really good, you know, voice interfaces. I mean, the S's and A's and GAs of this world, you could talk to, they certainly at the moment cannot really, they're not connected to a very good engine to understand and help and assist you to create. There's a lot of people who've put out a shingle saying, hey, I know how to do this better than everyone else. That's a lot of pick and shovel salespeople that, yeah, no. it is easy enough to use that you can figure it out yourself, and you should. And people who are kind of anti it are a bit like the people who back in the late 80s said, no, you've got to handwrite the letter. You can't use a word processor.
Yeah.
It reminds me of my high school math teacher who told me, no, you have to do all mental arithmetic because you won't be able to have a calculator with you wherever you go. Flashes Apple Watch.
Yeah.
It's the same sort of thing. We overvalue the wrong kinds of effort. And so you really need to just dive into these generative tools and start using them. They're tremendously powerful for every aspect of your business. You know, you do your spreadsheet, you upload it to it and say, hey, check these numbers for me. It'll do it. You've got a tricky situation with an employee that you've got to write them a pointed letter. Run it past them and run it past the AI and say, hey, I want to make sure that I don't cross any legal boundaries here. It'll do it. And it'll do a better job than most HR specialists.
I think
the people who should be really worried about this are the ones who that was their job.
They need to start
upskilling fast.
And finding where their value point is, because it's not reading through dull documents and trying to find those sort of points now. Because as you said, the AI can do that straight out of the box and that for you pretty after a little bit of training yourself. Great.
And that training you can get by literally going onto one of their websites and saying, please teach me how to use you.
And
it will.
And
you can even, one of the prompts I like is, please pretend I'm a moron, teach me how to use you.
Very
interesting answers.
I've had so many wow moments in terms of those interactions and giving it images to describe and getting it to create images and doing.
One thing I will say is, just because there's an AI bandwagon doesn't make everything to do with AI a business. Like, just as having an app is not the same as having a business.
I
get a lot of people saying, oh, I've got an app that does this. And I'm going, great.
Another tool. It's just another calculator.
You're going to turn that into a business, are you? Great. Who's going to pay for it? How many? Like, how are you going to rise above? How are you going to become visible? There's so much more than just the tool itself. So there's a lot of, people are getting funded at AI. I could do that. Going on, which is no.
Well, I think we're going to move through this phase pretty quickly, where everybody's going to be an AI business going forward. Yep. You can't just sort of say I'm AI. It's like, you know, everybody uses electricity. Everybody uses word processors. Everybody's on the
exactly.
internet. It's like, no, it's just AI. It's just another tool. Just move on. So, Bill, great. I'd like to get to the bottom of what do you think of your performance measures. You know, you've talked about your purpose driven in some of the areas in what you do and that. So what is good performance for you in your ventures? Is it just an IRR, or what's the broader things you're looking for?
So most people don't understand measurement. Yeah, measurement has distance, it has time, and it has form. So it has the form that you're measuring over time, and it has dimensionality to it. And a lot of people just don't even look. One of the interesting things, I became a type 2 diabetic and I have a continuous glucose monitor. And the difference between finger prick monitoring and continuous monitoring is just night and day in terms of blood sugar control, because you could see your reactions to things. And so similarly, if you're a CEO and you only look at your P&L once a month when your accountant prepares it, good luck.
Yeah.
If you don't know your cash balance every evening, if you don't understand why your cash balance is what it is every evening as a CEO, you think you're like your CFO should be doing that? You're insane.
Mm-hmm.
Straight up. If you cannot get to grips with these basic numbers and these basic measures, not going to work. And then in terms of a fund, you know, we have to look at the multiple on our investment in capital. You know, we have to look at ultimately, though, are distributions overpaid in capital? And in the case of our strategic fund, we also have to look at the increase in the parent company's P&L from our strategic benefit work. So these are hard, concrete numbers. In terms of environmental impact, you've got to look at gigatons of CO2 equivalent sequestered or avoided. And if you're not able to track down the measures and you're not able to show objectively what your impact has been, good luck. Yeah.
Right.
It's all very well to talk a good fight, but it's actually number of times the glove hits the face that tells you, or hits the gut that tells you whether you're actually a good fighter or not, right? I was talking to a young startup fellow who was also doing his first MMA fight. And I said, listen, the rules for MMA and the rules for a startup are exactly the same. Don't die, don't quit, and don't suck at what you do. And the only way you can know whether you suck or not is to measure the hell out of everything.
Right. Oh, Bill, that has been a fantastic master course, and the anecdotes and the perspective you got has been great. Thanks for sharing it with me, and thanks for sharing it with our audience.
You're very welcome, Andrew, and I hope everyone reads your book.
Thank you.
The book is Purpose to Performance, Innovative New Value Chain. Please subscribe to future interviews and give us a 5-star like.